I'm Gab, and the man rocking the BFLB is Jules. It's blue skies over West London this week because the Champions League is back.
Oh, yes.
Gaud is there. Let's rejoice. A ton of stuff going on. We saw the M&M making their debut. M&M, see?
Thank you very much.
I don't know if that's going to catch on, but, you know.
It will.
We saw Bayern and Barcelona. I wrote a great piece about it, but other than that, not much to say about that. We saw not a happy debut in the Champions League, second debut, or Manchester United's second debut in the Champions League for Cristiano. But I think we're going to start at Anfield, because Liverpool beat Milan 3-2. And it was one of those games that, to me, showed that you can be cooped. It's one of the reasons football's fun to some. You can be completely dominant and lose the game, or, as happened here, be completely dominant and go in 2-1 at halftime and wonder, what just happened?
So much in control. Liverpool opening the scoring, of course, early, having a penalty that then Mo Salah missed.
Oh, come on. You don't want to give props to your boy Mike?
It was not a good penalty.
Mad Mike saved it.
I said on BT Sport, before the penalty, I said Maignan is really good on penalties, but this is an easy save for him because it's such a bad penalty from Salah. The save on the rebound, on the header, is probably better, actually, than the save in itself on the penalty. And Liverpool completely controlling this game, and then they switched off a little bit. Trent is caught slightly off position on that right hand side, and Milan scored two goals almost back to back, but well worked goals. It's not just you hoof the ball and you get a bit lucky and a deflection, and then you think, okay, game on. Although you knew the second half would be much harder than for Milan, and it was too hard.
I think Liverpool right now are in a really, really good place.
Yeah, and we said that after the game at the weekend.
They were super impressive against Leeds.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny the way managers think, because a lot of times you think, you know, I want to kind of bottle that lightning. I want to keep that continuity going as much as I can, right? Mm-hmm. It's your Champions League debut. It's, you know, you're playing Milan, not a bad team. And what does he do? He manages to keep that continuity, keep that level of performance, while leaving out Sadio Mane, Thiago Alcantara, and especially Virgil van Dijk. When I saw that really, really surprised me. I mean, he's proven right. Credit to him. He knows his players. I think that says a lot about how he feels about the rest of the squad and the fact that, you know, maybe there's more competition for places at Liverpool than we think. And it shows a lot of the trust he has in the rest of his squad.
Yeah, you're right. I thought of the two games this week, this Milan game and then Crystal Palace at the weekend at home as well. I thought, okay, the Crystal Palace one is maybe the one where you rotate a bit.
You would have thought that's the Minamino game.
Yeah, the Origi game, the Joe Gomez game. You know, when you give Virgil a rest because he needs it. He, after a year without playing, he's played a lot. He went with international duty as well and all of that. And he did it against Milan, and it worked. And they look good, even Origi with that assist for Salah. Didn't do much apart from that. But clearly, collectively, they're back to that strength of, even if you don't have your top players, the rest can still do a good job because the team is so strong collectively. And I just thought they were impressive. They could have scored more goals. Maybe could have conceded another one. But I just thought it was a very convincing performance. And maybe this is what Milan wants to get to. I think for Milan it was not a game that they would have much regrets on, despite leading at some point at halftime, but thinking like, okay, we're not too far, we're still far but not too far, and let's continue the thing we've been doing because we're on the right path, clearly.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, making those changes, to me, that speaks to me of a manager, a fitness staff who really know their players, really, really can make the right decisions, and a manager with a ton of personality in Klopp. On Milan, I was struck. We were talking about this earlier. After the game, I was watching on Sky Italia, and they do this thing which I think more broadcasters around the world should do.
Yeah,
they had Fabio Capello in the studio, and Antonio Conte in Anfield, and they bring on Pioli, and you talk about asking a tough questions. Capello comes out and he basically says, "So, Stefano, I noticed that in this game, when you had the ball and you were in possession, you kept passing the ball sideways and you kept passing the ball slowly. I'm guessing that wasn't your plan, right?" And, you know, and I love that because, you know, because normally other places you get this, "Oh, disappointing evening," or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And to be fair to Pioli, he said, "Yeah, they're really good at pressing us. Yeah. They have more quality than we do. They have fresher legs. Their season started earlier. we didn't have a good, you know, that wasn't the plan, obviously, to pass the ball sideways continuously. And you have to admit that right now there is undoubtedly a talent gap between these two sides. But I agree with you. I mean, I think Milan are have the building blocks in place to do more. But right now, they're not there yet.
So I'm not Fabio Capello, Gab, as you can tell. And I didn't expect Pioli and Milan to change either the approach or the style or even the team. But when I saw the Rafael Leao, Theo left-hand sides, I thought...
There's a danger here.
Oh, okay. Because against Salah and Trent, if Leao does only 70% of the defensive work that he should be doing against a fullback like Trent, if Theo is a bit not on his game defensively, which again, this is not his forte, he's much better going forward.
Quite often. Yeah.
You could struggle there. And again, I didn't expect Pioli to change and to make that left hand side stronger to face Trent and Salah. But still, I thought you gave Liverpool already a bit of an opener and, 10 minutes in and Salah and Trent combine and Trent, even if it's a bit lucky and it's a Tomori on goal, scores the goal. Could that have been different? Or do you think, way they were right to go for what they've been good at for the last 2 years?
Well, I mean, so first of all, Rafael Leao, doesn't sound like he's played every game on the left.
Yeah.
And you could have changed it around. Maybe you could have played Rebic there and started Giroud or, it's all hindsight. But I think the Pioli's attitude, and I think Milan's attitude, isn't, we're going to stop you from beating us, is we're going to try to beat you.
Mm.
And in the same way you say, obviously, Trent and Salah, that's one of the best flanks in the world. Equally, they're so attacking, and we know Trent defensively. I mean, both goals.
And it worked,
Both goals came from that side.
Yeah.
So they said, well, I'm better off with Lau, with his pace and Theo's runs. We can pin him back. We can, use the space that's created when Trent goes forward, and maybe we'll be the one scoring a couple goals.
Mm.
It's a positive mindset.
Yeah,
rather,
I thought it was really
a defensive
brave,
mindset when, you're at Anfield against, and you haven't been in the Champions League for ages, and you're against a better team, and, you might lose 2-0, and, we wouldn't be talking about this. But it is clear that I think both Leao and Theo need to take this as a lesson, that you cannot switch off against these people. That was on Rafael Leao, and it's a bit of a concern because it comes after a very good performance, I thought, at the weekend.
Definitely.
So clearly that's something to think about. What struck me too, if you want to, and this is, I love pointing this out because to me this is always the danger in breaking everything down into a game of incidents, right? And I hate people who do that.
Yeah.
People only watch YouTube. Because if you only watch YouTube, if you only see the goals, you've got a deflected goal which could have easily not gone in.
Yeah.
You've got a penalty. The penalty was missed. But remind me of the second goal.
Salah 1-2 with Origi over the top. And
okay, the second goal, fine.
Calabria is covering up.
There's a mistake, but whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to give him props for that. But then the third goal is, again, another mistake. Pioli pointed this out, that in clearing it.
Someone on the edge of the box. There should be someone on the edge of the box.
But it's somebody, it's a defensive midfielder, edge of the box, who pulls off a wonder strike because he hit that absolutely perfectly.
Clean.
All credit to Jordan Henderson.
Very clean, yeah.
He's hit those before, but that is not a high percentage shot, right?
Yeah.
So you could break it down that way and be like, "Whoa, that's all they conceded." But if you watch the game, you both know they conceded a ton more than that, and they were never really in the game. Liverpool dominated them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I think the message to take is, I think Milan are on the right path, but they need to double down on trying to play fast, on keeping up their intensity and whatnot. But I want to ask you about Liverpool because I assume we're going to see a lot more of Naby Keita. Because, frankly, at this stage, with Elliot obviously out for a long time, Wijnaldum gone, as we know, the fact that Thiago didn't start this game tells me that he's not sure that Thiago can play three games in a week,
or maybe even
two games in a week.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at Thiago's appearances, off the top of my head, I don't remember how many he made last year for Liverpool, but I think throughout his career, certainly from Bayern to Liverpool, he's generally going at about 55 to 60% of league starts.
Yeah, he's been a bit injury prone. Yeah.
So is this a problem? Is this an issue going forward, where either Keita shows that he can be the third midfielder on a consistent basis, or Curtis Jones comes good again? I don't know, because I just wonder if this is where they might end up being shorthanded.
Or Oxlade Chamberlain. And maybe the answer is you've got three guys, pretty much, Ox, Curtis Jones, and Naby Keita, to do that job. So you can rotate them, you can play them depending on the opposition, depending on how you want to play. And they're your third man, the three of them in one kind of thing. I don't know if that works, even when Thiago doesn't play, I don't know if that works. I really thought that...
Yeah, but you realize that's a gamble, because none of those three have ever, I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain also hugely, none of those, I was trying to think, I don't think any of those three guys have ever started 30 games
or stayed fit
in a season and, you know, have given you that sort of high volume. And also you've got Henderson coming off the injury, right? And he's, 32 now, right? So, and he plays with so much energy, it is a big ask to say automatically, oh, Hendo, you're going to play 55 games this season at a high level. Mm. You know, that's also something that might be outside of your control. I just wonder...
But I don't think you've got much choice, Gab. That's the thing. Because you didn't recruit that Locatelli or Tielemans or whoever they were linked with, and there were a few, and maybe they looked into it, just could not either afford it or were not completely convinced.
I think it's the financials. I think
so too. But so he goes, okay, I'm going to do with what I've got. And then that's what you do. I really thought that after the Thiago Fabinho performance against Leeds, that he would continue that a bit, just to give them a bit more run, because as we said, only 9 games they've played together in midfield in the Premier League. So, but he chose something different. Again, he worked out, so no problem at all. But yeah, you wonder who, if there was a problem to Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago, who could come in and when, and that could be a problem eventually down the road, I guess.
I'll tell you where I don't think there is a problem, and that is with Diogo Jota, because again, like Manny, I had concerns about Firmino because he's such a unconventional player in some ways, because he's so unselfish and his movement, the stuff he does off the ball, it's harder to replace. But again, Jota, I think, has been phenomenal when he's replaced Firmino. He does the Firmino things, and he does more than that.
Yeah, and please, it's not just about goals and assists. And we say many times, it's not just about that. It's a run of the ball that creates space for someone else. It's that kind of intelligence that Jota brings. And he's still so young. And really, you know, okay, there was the good seasons at Wolves, but still quite an experience for this kind of level, I mean, you know. Yeah. And I just think he's a fantastic player. And for me, there's no doubt that he's number one in the pecking order now for that role. And Firmino, he's the second choice now. And that unless Klopp wants to rest Jota a bit or rotate a little bit, then Firmino comes in. But other than that, Jota is your number one. And already you see as well more the relationship between Salah and, I mean, Mane didn't start again, but even between Salah, Mane and Jota. And especially, I think, the Salah-Jota, which I thought at the beginning when Jota arrived last season took a bit of time, which is normal, to, you know, to grow. Now I think he's there. They find each other well, and I just think Jota is going to be a fantastic player this season for them.
Did you think Origi had that little dink in his locker? I don't think I've ever seen him do that before.
I'm not even sure his first touch is that good, but then I was like, oh, wow.
Are you going to say it's accidental?
No, but I was like, oh, wow, okay. Considering his last goal was in the Champions League final against Spurs for Liverpool, that, you know, is...
I think Salah wasn't even expecting it.
That's why I think, that's why he thinks,
I think he was coming through, he might shoot and, like, get a rebound or something.
Crazy.
And then all of a sudden, you see his whole face lights up, he sees the ball right in front of him.
And I love Divock Origi, he's such a good kid. He's just, you know, one of those players.
I think when most people sort of looked ahead to the Premier League and the Premier League race, we would have had City or Chelsea as favourites. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had City. And then for me personally, then Liverpool, and then a little gap, and then United. Do we feel a little differently based on what we've seen so far? And then the fact that Liverpool have been impressive. I mean, do you put them alongside City and Chelsea at this stage?
But then they could not beat Chelsea with 11 men against 10 for a whole 45 minutes. So I'm not sure how much that... And again, that was 3 or 4 weeks ago. So since then, they're fitter, they play better. I don't know. I just think that that top four is very close to each other, even United. I think this is the strongest top four that we've ever had in the Premier League, or certainly for a long time. And I think that's going to give us an amazing season. And I think Liverpool could well win it, but they would have to be near perfect, really, between between now and the end of the season, but in key moments of the season, in those big games, because whoever wins it will have to be so strong to just fend off the other three, because I think he's that kind of quality and high standards.
I'm not going to ask you percentages.
I will leave that for
Don Hutchinson. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough of Anfield. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
It was the first outing for the M&M front line of Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe, but they can only manage a 1-1 draw against Bruges. I personally don't think they deserved more than that.
I think they probably deserve less, Gab. I thought Bruges were great, the better team by far. I was so excited, as you can imagine, before for that front three, starting the first time together, playing the first time together. And in the end, I think the expected goals combined for the three players is 0 point something crazy. Yeah, six or...
Messi did hit the woodwork, although it was from a million miles out. That's not going to help you.
At 1-1. And then it looked like more Neymar and Mbappe. It looked more like Neymar and Messi combining. I think he's 6 passes from Neymar to Messi, 5 from Messi to Neymar. And then Mbappe, not much from either of the other two. So, but again, it would not have clicked like this straight away. For example, something that I was told last night, Gab, which I was a bit surprised, is that, you know, sometimes at training where you do like tactical sessions where you put your strongest 11 against the sub, for example, Pochettino has not done that yet. So even at training, they haven't played together apart from those little 5v5 or 3v3 games, but not in a full practice with your starting 11, for example. So it will take a bit of time to click. What for certain is
Pochettino hasn't had any tactical sessions with his players.
Not at 11v11, which I found flabbergasting. But
I love me some Poch, but yeah, that strikes me as weird.
But that will come. And again, we saw a very unbalanced team. That's the thing. And that's what worries me the most, because it was too easy for Bruges to create chances, to have shot. 16 shots they had. 16 shots. What's going to happen against City in 2 weeks' time?
When you have two guys who don't defend and another guy who gets injured. I know.
Speaking of Mbappe, PSG sporting director Leonardo said on French television on Tuesday that he doesn't see Mbappe leaving at the end of the season. Gab, should I be happy with that, or is he fibbing?
He's doing his job. I love Leo. He's not just very handsome. He's a very nice man. But what's he going to say? Oh, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure he's leaving us. I mean, the club line, correct me if I'm wrong, has been, oh, we're confident he's going to extend. What's he going to do? Hopeful is more than confident?
Yeah, it's more hopeful. They're still hoping that...
But in English, confident is here. Hopeful is here.
Yeah. That's why I think hopeful...
Oh, so they're not at confident yet. No. They're still at hopeful.
Yeah.
All right, just checking. And he also said mean things about Real Madrid, but
yeah,
you know, but hey, that was par for the course. Cristiano Ronaldo made his Champions League debut for Manchester United away to Young Boys and scored, but then Aaron Wan-Bissaka got sent off, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer made a bunch of weird substitutions, and it all fell apart. Is that a fair summary, Jules?
And we could have had Jesse Lingard's not sure what he was trying to do, what he was doing in that area of the pitch.
Apparently he said afterwards, mistakes happen. I'm like, yeah, Jesse, they do.
Yeah. So, I think it's a fair summary. I don't know. Solskjaer didn't want to take any responsibility for the defeat. I thought, as you said, not sure about the substitution, especially taking off Bruno and Cristiano when he did. But it's one of those.
Listen, I don't. You can't blame Solskjaer for Lingard's errant back pass. Okay,
but should he have been on the pitch in the first place?
I'm not even going to blame him for that. I'm just going to point out that after you make the change, you go to the back three. Manchester United didn't take a single shot. You know, Manchester had two shots on goal the entire game. I think both were in the first 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's
and both were Cristiano. One of them was a goal, right?
Yeah.
You don't shoot on goal after that.
No.
You move to a back five, and in the course of the 90 minutes plus injury time, young boys, I'll repeat, young boys, not Bayern Munich, not Paris Saint-Germain, not City, young boys, took 20 shots on goal, and United took two shots on goal. I know you have 10 men.
Yeah.
I think you have to take a little bit of responsibility for that, even if it had ended up in a draw. Even if you'd won because they'd given that penalty on Cristiano, which I personally didn't think was a penalty.
No.
Like, I mean, I'm sorry. People say we're hard on Solskjaer. I think he's a good person, and I think he's not a bad manager, but sometimes he gets things wrong. And I think this was one game where he got things wrong.
The expected goals for United after the red card in the 35th minute is zero.
Yeah.
Between the 35th minute and the 95th minute, expected goals is zero.
If you're going to play if you're going to go and play effectively as they did, you know, 5-2-2 or whatever you want to call it with Bruno behind Cristiano, you don't have any pace. So that means that when you win the ball back, you have to keep possession and try to build up. You can't just lump it into space for Cristiano to run onto because the man is 36 years old. And yes, he can sprint, but he can't sprint over and over and over and over again, nor can you expect him to just play back to goal and hold the ball up because he's going to get lumps kicked out of him. He's not that sort of player. Put Cristiano in a position where Cristiano can be successful.
Yeah,
anyway, bad game, move on.
A late goal scored by Rodrigo and set up by Eduardo Camavinga give Real Madrid 3 points at San Siro against Inter. Though Edin Dzeko thought that his team deserve better than that. Do you agree, Gab? I certainly do.
I do too. I think Dzeko's part of the reason because he missed a couple chances. Skriniar missing a big chance. Lautaro missing a big chance. I need to be consistent. I don't have a problem with teams that create a lot of chances. That is the purpose of the game and concede few chances. And I think this is the right way forward for Inter. It's a shame they lost this game. It happens. Shout out to Ancelotti, by the way. He's supposed to be all about old players and veterans. And
that's the future.
It's
Valverde,
the two kids.
To Camavinga, to Rodrigo. The future.
Yeah. So, big 3 points. A Romelu Lukaku goal gives Chelsea a 1-0 win over Zenit. Jules, were you impressed? I mean, better than Villa, right?
Yeah. Yes, slightly. But not too much because they didn't create much at all. I think they had only two shots on target, maybe, one being the goal. And Lukaku had hardly anything.
But Mendy only had to make one big save as opposed to...
And then Zubia has a
at the end.
Shocking miss. That it should have been 1-1. But what I was impressed with, and it's nothing new, Gab, is that Romelu Lukaku got half a chance. Because I think it's a good cross by Azpilicueta, but this is half a chance. And he buried it. And I just think this is why you pay 100 million. This is why you're going to win the Premier League. This is why you're going to have a chance to keep and retain the Champions League. It's because you've got players like him. Yep. And he makes such a big difference. Ajax destroys Sporting 5-1 away in Portugal. Sebastian Haller scored 4 goals. And the stat everyone was talking about, Gab, is that he joins Marco van Basten as the only player to have scored a quadruple on his Champions League debut. I'm not sure, though, that you really like that stat.
Okay, so first I want to be nice to Ajax. They played really well. I was really impressed with Antony. I thought Gravenberch as well, but Antony in particular.
Yeah.
Our friend JJ told us that he's going to break out. Maybe he's a little early with that. This could be it. This stat is so stupid.
Who else?
No.
Basten, that's it.
Do you know why it's stupid, other than the fact that you're mentioning Haller in the same breath as Van Basten? That wasn't Van Basten's debut in 1992 when he scored 4 goals. That was when the competition was renamed
in the Champions League.
This is stupid. This is like when we have like, so-and-so is coming close to Alan Shearer's Premier League goals record.
There was football before
1992.
Fair enough.
Marco Van Basten scored like 20 goals before 1992 in the European Cup. Come on, man. Come on.
There's still 4 goals.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Bayern beat Barcelona 3-0 at the Camp Nou. Jules, I guess the good news is that it didn't finish 8-2.
That's the good news, Gab. And the only good news, Barcelona has zero shot on target. Zero. This is like literally none. There's no shot, nothing. Manuel Neuer didn't have anything to do in the whole game. I think we knew that Bayern were much better than Barcelona. This is not the issue here. The issue is that Barcelona were far worse probably than what we expected them to be in that game.
For me, the issue is, so they concede they concede one goal, which is a deflection. Then after they concede the second goal at 2-0, our mark, he takes off Busquets. And says, I wrote a whole column about this, and he sends on Gavi and Demir, who, unless you're a hardcore Kool-Aid, you wouldn't have never heard of these guys. No. And then later on, he took off, was it Jordi Alba?
Yeah.
And he sends on Balde, another kid from the youth team. Yeah. I think...
Why?
Okay, I stuck up for Koeman on this occasion.
Why?
Just to troll you. No, I stuck up for him because he said, there's no point. We're 2-0 down. We've lost this game. Let's play the kids. The kids are not going to get booed. The kids are the future. Let me send a message. Let me remind everybody
really?
Of the nonsense that I have on this bench right now.
He was lucky not to lose 6-0 that game, which just imagine... Had they lost 6-0, which they were very close to, because Ter Stegen had to make two or three really good saves.
I don't know
saves.
About six. I think they could have lost four. But whatever. But it doesn't matter.
What? It doesn't matter to lose 5-0 at home against Bayern Munich.
In those circumstances, once the game is over?
I think you keep your best players, try to get a goal back at least.
Keep your best players, tire them out, still concede the goals, be even more humiliated.
That's not the point.
Lose
the back five was the wrong call anyway. He made a mess of it again. And... it's just not looking good. Two days after saying, if this club has a future, it's thanks to me.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, who does Koeman think he is? Come on. It's crazy. And by the way, continuing with Koeman, Gab, Catalan media are now reporting that he's got 3 games to stay in the job. I know those 3 games are Cadiz, Granada, I think, first, then Cadiz, then Levante. So, not the toughest of games, because after that, there will be Benfica, Atletico, and Valencia. But those three could be where his future is played out.
Yeah, and this is stupid. These ultimatums are stupid. 3 games to save your job, blah, blah, blah. It's just a dumb approach to take after a defeat to Bayern. Because I don't want to make excuses with the absentees, obviously. He had I think on the bench, I actually went through this, on the bench, he had Philippe Coutinho, who hasn't played since 2020.
Yeah.
He had Sergino Dest coming off an injury. He had Ricky Puig, who hasn't played since last season. Right, so those guys might as well not have been there. There's no point in them being there. Obviously, no Braithwaite, no Fati, no
Dembele.
Aguero, no Dembele. Yeah, sick. No, the French Darren Anderton. You know what? The reality is, this is what he has to work with. On top of that, he's not the greatest coach in the world. But look, who's going to take over? You think things are going to improve if somebody else comes in? You don't judge based on these games.
No.
You judge based on whether he can keep control, he can keep people thinking positive, and if you think he's heading for a top four finish. Those are the only things that should matter to Koeman keeping his job.
Yeah.
Manchester City beat Leipzig 6-3 as Kevin De Bruyne and Phil Foden return. Jules, is Pep Guardiola's glass half full for the 6 goals or half empty for the 3 goals conceded at home?
Can I say both? I think it's a bit of both, because they look really good going forwards. I mean, when you can also bring on Foden, Sterling, Gabriel Jesus, Gundogan, it helps. And defensively, especially on that left-hand side with Zinchenko, they look a bit dodgy. So I don't know what would be...
Let me tell you, it's half empty. It's half empty.
I don't know.
For the way they switched off, they very obviously switched.
But...
I'm not saying I know Pep Guardiola intimately, let alone biblically, but... you can't be happy when that happens. And I think afterwards, he's actually going to think about that.
Maybe.
Not the individual mistake so much, but the switching off. Because you know what? Leipzig, not a good match for them. Leipzig, I don't want to criticize Jesse Marsh.
Although Nkunku scored a hat trick, by the way.
Props to Nkunku. But you know what? They go and they try to press the life out of City, and City just passed the ball through you. You know that they can do that.
Yeah. You know? Four players have scored a hat trick in the Champions League on the losing side.
And Nkunku's one of them.
And the other three? Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo, Bale. And Kavichi for Başakşehir. Here you go. This is your quiz question of
there.
The day. Oh, and by the way, if you saw the shout out that, or I'm not sure if it's a shout out, but Pep roasting Mahrez in that second half and shouting at him, we were like, oh, wow, okay. Juventus with 3-0 away to Malmö. Gab, some improvement for Max Allegri's team, or Malmö just not very good, or a bit of both?
I love my JDT, who's in charge of Malmö, Jon Thomasson. Nice man. Once interviewed him, he's wearing a wonderful turtleneck. They're not very good. But it was important for Juve to be professional, to get the job done. The 4-4-2 worked. Mm-hmm. Dybala scored, Morata scored. Yeah. Great, move on. That's what they needed.
Yeah.
Porto hold Atletico Madrid to a scoreless draw at the Wanda Metropolitano, despite going down to 10 men and having a goal disallowed for an accidental handball. Jules, we always underestimate Porto.
Where do we learn? Yeah, you're right. We do. So well organized, structured. They worked so hard. They were really good, I thought, in that game.
They could have won that game.
They could have won that game.
They deserved to win
that
game. They
hit the post as well. Yeah, Otavio. And then the goal disallowed is the rule. I know it's a bit harsh.
So unlucky.
Taremi falls and yet his arm touches the ball that was already going in. But this is the rules. And then Mbemba got sent off. I'm more worried about Atletico because with the ball, there wasn't much at all there, despite all the changes that he made in the second half. It was Antoine Griezmann's first home game for Atleti. He came on in the second half and he got booed by his own fans. Gab, can you understand why? And how much work will he have to do to win them back?
I have a ton of respect for the fans in the stadium. And so, yeah, you have a right to boo. This is a person who walked out on you to join a rival club. It's as simple as that. You are entitled to go and boo him.
Yeah.
Equally, if he had a horrible time in Barcelona, you know, bask in your schadenfreude and hopefully, but give him a chance to win you back with his performances and so on, because he is an Atletico Madrid legend.
Yeah.
Four first half penalties and a red card early in the second half, and Sevilla are held by Salzburg. But Jules, I have to ask about your boy Youssef En-Nesyri's dive, which got him sent off.
Ooh, Youssef, you don't want to see that one again, because that was so bad. So bad. I mean, it's not even like there's someone near you, my friend. It's just like such a bad dive. At least if you're trying to do it like Ale Moreno style, you know, be clever. Do it like when maybe you can get something out of it. We're not advocating for diving, of course, but this was so bad.
You know, there was no VAR when Ale Moreno
played.
That's
why it got away with it so
much. I think that's the big difference.
Didn't need VAR anyway. This one, we could all see it from all over the world. Anyway, Borussia Dortmund win away to Besiktas 2-1, and Jude Bellingham steals the show. Gab, celebrate the kid, please.
He's absolutely incredible.
Wow.
He played the diamond. Marco Rosa is pretty stubborn. Yeah,
your favorite diamond.
He played the diamond with Julian Brandt in there. I thought, this isn't good. You know, Besiktas can play the ball. They can get overrun. It doesn't matter, because having Jude Bellingham there, it's like having three different players in one.
Incredible.
He's so smart. He's so athletic. He can finish. He can create. He's a real deal, and he even goes and he gave a little kiss to Erling Haaland after the game. It finishes 0-0 between your hipster favorites, Wolfsburg, since you're now convinced that they're a hipster side, and Lille. But Jules, I'm still not sure why Jonathan David's goal was disallowed.
I found an angle where you could see the ball had gone out of play just in front of the bench on the touchline, when Angel Gomez played it. And I think you could see that it's all out.
So it was a correct decision.
Correct decision, yeah, that's right. As gutted as I was, as it was the correct decision to not award a penalty right at the end and actually...
That was pretty obvious.
Yeah, but still he gave a penalty first, Makiele. But I thought Lille played really well. The Lille of last season, the Lille that won that Ligue 1 title, not the Lille of this season, and they were really unlucky and they should have won that game. But at least it gave them a bit of momentum and hope because I think if they keep playing like this in the competition, they might have a chance, just a little one, to make it to the last 16 in a quite open group, I would say. So I think it'd be very, very interesting. Villarreal and Atalanta draw 2-2 in Spain, and Gab, the question is, which misunderstood genius of a coach is going to be more disappointed, Emery or Gasperini?
I use the term misunderstood genius because that is what these people are. They're both... Would it be
was
fair
a really good game.
They're both very odd people, would you say that?
Yeah, I would say, yeah. In terms of social skills, you mean? Yeah.
In terms of social skills, yeah. without question. I think Gasperini's actually going to be more disappointed. I think it was one of those games where, you know, obviously Atalanta started the season, didn't start the season great. Yeah. They created chances in this thing. You know, they've evolved. They're now playing with Malinovsky and Pessina behind a lone striker. I thought they created the bulk of the chances.
Yeah, they did.
Made a mistake for the goal. But equally, this is what Unai Emery does so well. And there's a reason why he's won all those Europa Leagues, is that he can go and he can kind of, he's like a sniper. He can go and you know, he takes a lot of abuse and then he picks you off. And that's what he's done well. I think both these sides are more than capable of advancing. I don't think they both will because of the way the group shakes out.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I think they're both very dangerous sides to face. All right, I'm going to take a gratuitous swipe at English referees.
Yeah,
I just cannot resist. Now, if you're old like me, you might remember Graham Poll showing Croatia's Josip Simunic 3 yellow cards at the 2006 World Cup. Yes, kids, this really did happen. I think they even had HDTV back then.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony Taylor opted for a more minimalist approach in the scoreless draw between Dinamo Kiev and Benfica when he booked Dinamo's Denis Garmash and then immediately sent him off. Thinking, I guess he must have already booked them.
Yeah.
That's not how it works, yeah?
It's not. Usually, so, Anthony, just in case you were not sure, after 2 yellows, and only 2 yellows, not 1, not 3, you can give and show a red card. Otherwise, you have to wait for the second yellow to come at some point. And Garmash, it was a game I was covering on BT Sport on the Goal Show, and Garmash was like, and obviously Garmash, I would suspect, doesn't speak English because he could not speak to the referee clearly.
He's just going like this.
He was like, and he put his hand over his head and his hair, and he was like, and Anthony Taylor was trying to tell him something, and clearly there was a lack of communication there. They could not understand each other. But I was like, I'm not sure he got a first yellow. This is strange. And then not long after, Anthony Taylor rectified it. But like you said, off air, what's the fourth referee doing?
Yeah, you would think somebody would get in his ear. You always talk about refereeing.
Like, no,
it's a team, teamwork. Like, it's like, Ant, you haven't booked this guy yet.
No.
I just want to be very clear on this. It's not stuff like this that makes Anthony Taylor a bad referee or a good referee. For me, he's actually a pretty good referee. When you make mistakes that are just so craven, I can't count against you. You see what I'm saying here? This is just a brain fart. This is what happened to him.
Okay.
I don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't think it's ever happened to him before in his career, and it's never going to happen again. I'm not going to judge his quality as a referee. It's fun to make fun of him for
it.
But you agree with
enough.
That, right?
Yeah, kind of. I still don't think this should happen.
No, it shouldn't happen.
Sheriff Tiraspol did rather well on the Champions League debut. First ever game in the competition, beating Shakhtar Donetsk 2-0. Gab, does this feel like a fairy tale to you? And can you tell us a bit more about the background of this story?
Yeah, well, obviously, Sheriff are a team from Moldova, but in real life, they would say that they're from Transnistria, which is a country that I don't think is recognized by anybody except for Russia and a couple others. Basically, when the Soviet Union broke up, Moldova was a Soviet republic. Most Moldovans think they're ethnically linked to Romania. But obviously, there was a bunch of ethnic Russians who lived there when it was part of the Soviet Union. And they mostly lived at the other edge of the country in Transnistria. They were worried about what might happen. So the ones who were there moved there. And then they kind of declared semi-independence or a pretendo independence. And there's border checks and whatever.
Backed by the USSR at the time and, you know, Russia.
Backed by Russia, yeah. The people that protected it. Without getting into the politics of it, the one thing about Tiraspol, about Sheriff, and there's two ways to look at it. One is, oh, it's great, these teams from Eastern Europe coming and competing. On the other hand, some people would definitely take issue with some of the people who are behind Tiraspol. But, you know, we have 55 member nations in UEFA.
That's true. This
is what we got.
They earned their place. They beat Dinamo Zagreb. They went through all the qualifiers, the playoffs.
And they definitely deserve to be here. They played really well against Zagreb. Was it 3-0?
In the first leg, in the home leg, yeah.
And then again, it's against Shakhtar Donetsk. We're all talking, oh, Shakhtar did so well last season. They got the Zerbi, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's a big 2-0 win.
A big upset.
Liverpool midfielder Harvey Elliott says he bears no grudge against Leeds defender Pascal Strike and says he feels bad that he's getting a three-match ban for the tackle that will cause him to miss a long stretch of the season. Jules, those are classy words.
Very much so, Gab, and I applaud Harvey Elliott, who's only 18 years old, who had such a bad injury, and to come out and talk like this towards Strike and the situation, I think he's really fantastic, and we wish him, obviously, a speedy recovery. He started the season so well. It's a real shame for him and for Liverpool that he got this bad injury. But again, I think it's one of those moments where Strike goes in for the ball and it's a bit unfortunate for the gravity of the injury, certainly. So I can see where Javier Elliott is coming from. I can see the three-game ban as well coming for Strike.
You can see that, but on the FC show last night, somebody pointed out that there was a similar tackle on Mane a few minutes later, which wasn't given as a foul and nothing, and play went on and Mane was fine, didn't get hurt. So the obvious question is, did the red card come? And he didn't even whistle for a foul at the time. Did the red card in the ban come because Elliott got hurt?
Yeah.
So if we say there was
which
no malice,
which I think is a fair reason to do it.
But if we say there was no malice and no intent in what he did, and then at the same time, basically, we were just punishing him because somebody got hurt. Whereas if he hadn't gotten hurt, you wouldn't have been punished.
But I think the injury in itself is a good justification for giving the foul, the red card, and the suspension. You know, I went really strong on Jordan Pickford, of course, a year ago, and Van Dijk. And I just think that an injury, even if Strike is not guilty of it because that was not his intention, you just cannot just let it go
because somebody gets injured.
Exactly.
Whereas if he doesn't get injured, it's okay, you let it go.
Yeah, I remember Kurt Zouma when he was in France tackling the ball and then getting a social player, getting a 10-match ban simply on the gravity of the injury that he caused by the tackle, although it was a fair tackle, but it was a very aggressive.
Was that the whore YouTube tackle? Was it, who was the lesser defender, the Polish guy? Really big dude when they won the title.
Yeah, Waleski or something.
Wasilewski,
that's it. No, it was. I'm sure it was Saint-Étienne against Sochaux. I'm sure it was Zouma on someone else. But and again, it was the injury and the gravity of it that led to the ban. I'm sure it was a Saint-Étienne Sochaux game. I think I'm pretty sure Zouma on one of the Sochaux forwards.
Was it Goubert?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Good memory.
And I think the Wasilewski one, if memory serves, was Axel Witsel. So I spent a lot of time. Yeah. I spent a lot of time here on YouTube going and looking for tackles. Sorry, it's, you know, my dark secret.
Love that. The US Soccer Federation is offering the women's national team identical terms to the men in terms of contract from the federation. But the women, who are appealing an equal pay lawsuit, this is a long ongoing situation, said that it's just a publicity stunt. What do they mean? What's going on?
This is a really, really complicated issue.
Yeah, we've mentioned
issue.
It before on the show, yeah, where they feel they should be
like
paid
a lot
as much
of
as the
complicated
price.
Issues. What really annoys me is people just without having any understanding just saying equal pay, equal pay, equal pay. No, because it's a lot more complicated than that. The reason the women said this is a publicity stunt is because the women are in a very different situation to the men when it comes to equal pay. Because, for example, most of the men get their entire healthcare recovery. You know, they play for professional clubs, most of them in Europe and stuff, and they get a lot more benefits from playing for the national clubs, which a lot of the women who, you know, might play in the NWSL where there's less money, they don't necessarily receive that level. So you can't treat them 100% equally. That's not what the women are asking for. Equally, I love the fact that they go and they bring FIFA into this and say, well, the prize money at the World Cup is different. Let me tell you something about the prize money at the Women's World Cup, apart from the fact that there's fewer teams. It is a lot higher for the men's. There's different historical reasons. FIFA say they're going to double that. Hopefully they will. But the prize money you get from the World Cup as a federation doesn't have much to do with whether you pay your players and how much you pay your players.
No, definitely
those
not.
Are two different issues. If you think that the women deserve equal pay or more pay or whatever because of all the games that they play, especially in between those 4 years when they're not at the World Cup.
Yeah.
women have every right to go and negotiate those terms independently of the prize money. You don't just go and go. Obviously, it would suit the U.S. Soccer Federation fine to say, like, oh yeah, let's lobby FIFA to make the prize money equal, because of course they're far more likely to win World Cup than a men's World Cup.
Yeah.
So let's be very clear on this. FIFA prize money goes to the Federation, and the Federation, they can do with it whatever they like. They can pay people zero, they can give all the money to the players. So people are mixing so many different issues in this that it is a shame that this is being played out across the media. And I'm sorry, on this occasion, this is exactly what it is. Mm. It is a publicity stunt and nothing more. There's concern in the game over the long-term impact of heading and brain injuries. The Daily Mail reporting that they're going to have one of the first trial games. Yeah. We're going to try two solutions. They're going to have different rules in each half. In the first half, you'll only be allowed to head the ball in the box. In the second half, you won't be able to head the ball at all. It's just an experiment. Is this worthwhile?
I think it's worth looking into it, Gab, because we know now there's been many studies that shows that indeed heading the ball too much, a bit like all the shocks in American football, in NFL, for example, is dangerous for your health, especially if you're a professional player with a lot of games happening and playing for a long time. And the idea of just hitting the ball in the box is because the ball would not come as heavy or as hard as it if it's a goal kick or a clearance from the keeper and it goes really high and then you have to head it on the halfway line, for example, which a lot of the defenders do, I guess maybe more in the lower leagues than in the Premier League, for example. So yeah, I'm all for it to see what happens. If it's really dangerous for the players, I would be for scrapping the headers in a way, find a way of doing it. I don't know if there's something to be able to do maybe with the footballs to make it, I don't know, so that when you head it, he absorbs a bit more the impact. I don't know, something like that. I would be really keen to explore everything, because heading is part of the game, of course. But not to the detriment of players' health.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you need to look at everything. There's a big technology piece in terms of the balls themselves and how they're made. I think there's a big piece as well in simply in the technique for heading, because it's been shown that if you head the ball properly, your trauma is less severe than like if you let the ball bounce off your head or whatever. Equally, I think there's more than can be done in training sessions too, because really, if you think about it, in training session, you train much more than you play. You're more likely, especially at youth level, you're more likely to go and just simply accumulate more of those little.
Yeah,
micro,
you were saying when you were a kid, there was a lot of drills to do for you to clear the ball and for players.
Yes,
in position to clear the ball.
If you were playing defensive midfielder, center back, we actually did these drills where they just have somebody punt the ball high up in the air, and my job was just to head the ball away to one of the wingers. I wasn't allowed to try to control it or chest it down because I wasn't deemed good enough to do that.
No.
But it was fine.
Bad coaching.
Hitting the ball away.
Bad coaching. Yuri Tielemans has entered the final 2 years of his contract with Leicester City, and he says he's keeping his options open. Gab, that's the right thing to do, right?
Yeah, he got a bit of stick for saying that, rather than avoiding the question. But you know what? He's a professional footballer. His career could end tomorrow.
Yeah.
He's keeping his options open. I don't want to be cruel here, but if Yuri Tielemans suffered a bad injury, I'm not sure Leicester would leave the contract on the table. So this is what happens when you enter the final 2 years. You're talking about one of the highest rated players in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for Leicester, they've kind of passed through the 2 year window where you can get full value for him, which means that if he decides not to sign and they sell him in the summer, he's going to, he's not going to be worth as much. But there are other things that can happen. Leicester could extend him maybe with a release clause or whatever. I have absolutely no problem with somebody adopting the stance. He's not being ungrateful.
No.
He's given a lot to the club, even though he hasn't been there a very long time. And this is just the business of football.
I completely agree with you.
Pelé is out of hospital after treatment for a colon tumor. He says he's ready to play 90 minutes plus extra time and penalties.
I love that quote.
Do you believe him?
I want to, Gab. I really hope it's the truth. And I love that quote that he said. I thought it was really great and witty. We wish him all the best.
80 years young.
80, exactly. And we really hope that he's okay. And that was just a bad moment to go through. and that he would be fine for the next 100 years or so, you know, whatever he wants. Maurizio Sarri has been banned for 2 games following the event at the final whistle of the Milan defeat at the weekend where he got sent off. What was the problem? Was he just like shouting at the referee too much?
No, let's see. He runs onto the pitch because he wants to get into an argument with Salamakers. Salamakers, the little Belgian blonde.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. I don't know what he was going to say to him. And then afterwards, in the tunnel, he starts swearing. And in Italy, okay, we have this, I obviously can't repeat it because I'm Italian, but we have this concept of blasphemy where you not just curse, but you curse in a religious manner. It's deeply offensive to many people. Oh. It's actually was part of the criminal code until recently. And it is still, in Serie A, you can be sent off for doing that. He obviously should know better. He obviously lost his cool. He's obviously a very, very, very intense man. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's because he went too long without smoking.
So maybe that's frustration.
Anyway, this brings us to an end, Jules. But we got to come back on Monday.
Monday.
I do this all over again.
Yes, big weekend of football.
Absolutely. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.